You're listening to the Strongpreneur Nation podcast with your host, Tom Reber.
Hey, Strongpreneur Nation, put your seatbelt on and get ready to have your mind blown in while listening to my interview today with David Katz. He's the founder of the Plastic Bank, where he is making massive change to help underprivileged people around the world have better lives, have more dignity, and really realize their value. And so I'm super excited to for all of you to be able to push play and listen to this. And at the end, I'm going to ask you to take some action. I'm going to actually ask you to get on social media and do some stuff to help David push this thing forward. So do me a favor and take that action if you do that. And then finally, I want to give a shout out and a thank you to Marcel Kohler, who introduced me to David Katz about a month and a half ago when we were down in Cabo San Lucas. So Marcel, I owe you one, buddy. It's awesome. Thank you. You are a solid human being. And, you know, I look forward to buying you a beer next time I see you. All right. So with that, enjoy my talk here today with David Katz. Yes, we met about not even a month ago, I don't think, down in Cabo San Lucas via a mutual friend, Marcel.
Yes.
Who is an amazing human being. And yes. I was down, Marcel and I were down there for an event, and you were down there with Marcel a few days before. And I shot out a Facebook message that I was sitting in a bar getting ready to watch the NFL football games on the beach, and you guys showed up, and here we are. So at least that's how I remember it from that day.
I think that's exactly how it is. Yeah, I think life, you know, very often moves you in certain directions.
Absolutely, and I'm really really glad that we got to spend that afternoon together, hanging out and talking and stuff. So, I gave a quick intro on you. What did I miss? What's important for our audience to know about you?
Well, maybe it's important to chat about the Plastic Bank a little bit, so they have a greater sense of the scope of my thinking.
Absolutely.
And you know, if I share with a new listener that doesn't really know what the Plastic Bank is, what we've done is we've monetized waste. And we've created a chain of micro recycling and solar powered markets that allows the poor to collect and use plastic as a currency. Hmm. Now, not only can they go and collect the garbage that's underneath their feet or keep it, you know, go and collect it from the canals, which ultimately is on its way to the ocean, they can bring that to the market and exchange it for cash, which is so important and the most popular. But to engage the entire population, we have a market approach where everyone can collect plastic and exchange it for internet access or like a tablet or cell phone minutes or power to charge their phone or quite a variety of other things. And we continue to endeavor to create social plastic. It's a material that's used in organizations. It's ultimately what should be defined or what should be the definition of plastic. We should be able to all be in a position where we can look at any piece of plastic and know that it helped people transcend poverty, kept it from the ocean, and ultimately the value was revealed in the communities from where it came from.
Dang, man, you came out of the gates hard. My mind is going really fast right now. So how did this come about? Like, when did this spark in your head to do this?
Well, it was May the 9th, 2013 that I had the epiphany. Now, was that the moment? I don't think so, Tom. I think that a part of this conversation has to get back to that moment that we all have, where we sit and something touches us somehow and we say, you know, someone should do something about that. Mm-hmm. But that's our message to ourselves. That's not someone else should. That message, in the message, it's contained, who do I need to be to solve this? Hmm. And we most often don't listen to that.
Had there been other things in your life that you had that question, like somebody should do this and you didn't take action? Like, what was the difference between those and this?
Oh, I think we've all had lost opportunities.
Right. Right.
How many other business ideas? I mean, this is a podcast for entrepreneurs. How many other ideas do we have where we go, oh, that'd be great. Oh, but you know what? I don't know if I'm that person. Mm-hmm. And so we refuse to accept who we can become.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to add that in that thought is revealed to ourselves the greatness that lies inside us. Mm-hmm. Now we can accept that we're great or we can accept that we're not great.
What What was it about Plastic Bank and this cause? Because there's certainly a lot of causes. And I know you talked about May 2013, where it kind of came about. But what, you know, what was it that made you bring your best energies and everything to this thing?
You know, there was a lot that preceded it. Certainly seeing the images of birds and fish and sea mammals that are the starving full. Mm-hmm. So much plastic in their bellies that they die. So much they can't bring in any nutrients to survive. Mm-hmm. I had an opportunity in the Manila Harbor just before I'd gone to an event called Singularity University. It's an amazing program for any entrepreneur that wants to have a greater view of the world and the opportunities that lie inside it. Hmm. And in the Manila Harbor, I was coincidentally at a wall that surrounds the aquarium. And it was in the Manila Harbor and the aquarium, and the way that it was situated and where I was maybe 50 or 60 feet above the ocean. The water in the Philippines is incredibly clear. And what the impact that it provided, because what I saw when I was standing these 50 or 60 feet above the water was I could not just see the plastic that was on the water, but because the water was so clear, I could see through it to the bottom. And I could see the vast amount of debris that was sitting on the ocean floor. And now I've come to learn through the course of time that plastic is negatively buoyant. Mm-hmm. It will sink. Most plastic will sink. Now, if there's some air in it, some certain conditions, if it's a bottle, it's got a top on, it'll float. And sometimes the ocean will spit it back out onto our beaches. But most of it will sink.
Okay. So.
And that was impactful, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so did you have any, you know, sometimes people start a business and they have experience and they have some things in that field. What did you have that you were bringing to this thing other than a desire to make it better?
You know, I think this is a really important, this is an important conversation that we all have the ability to make a decision. I don't think that it matters what you already have. I had no experience in plastic or recycling or setting up organizations in the poorest countries in the world. But I had the ability to persevere. I had the ability to learn. I had the ability to implement and make changes as I implemented. I had the ability to understand that in every obstacle is the way, and that everything that I was encountering was there for me so that I could learn to overcome it.
Had you always had that mindset?
I've had to persevere my entire freaking life. I've, you know, entrepreneur for 25 years. I've never had a job, actually. You know, I was a waiter for a period of my life when I was in college, but that was really, you know, entrepreneurship as well.
Sure.
I was working for tips. The stronger I worked, the better I worked, the better relationship that I had, the more I followed up with my client, mm-hmm. the more that I encouraged them to come back, the better my business built.
Yeah.
And so I've had experience in perseverance.
Yeah, which is the most valuable thing that you can have is just that mindset, right? So so let's give me a quick recap. Where's the Plastic Bank today?
Like, well, we're at 32 collection centers in Haiti. Okay. And we built out our standard operating procedures. We're ultimately, you know, we've been proven beautifully. System works exquisitely. And we continue to build out a franchise-based model that we can implement globally simultaneously. We're building a couple of centers a month right now, just as we kind of figure out different kiosk-type opportunities and trying to create a microfinance business that we can loan to people so that they can earn the center, to find nice entrepreneurs in the community that they as well use plastic, the volume of plastic that they collect, to pay back the loan. So monetize it. Ultimately, that's it, Tom. I'm telling you, it's really about revealing the value in that material, and just it's only about creative ways to reveal it.
Yeah, you know, when we were in Cabo hanging out and you mentioned you had 32 centers in Haiti, that obviously struck a nerve with me since one of my children is from Haiti. So I have an adopted son who's from Port-au-Prince.
Oh, awesome.
And he, the city Soleil area.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And we adopted him when he was almost turning nine, so at the end of his end of his eights.
And lucky.
Yeah.
For everyone. It's a beautiful story too. Everyone should resonate on that.
Total blessing. And actually all three of my kids were adopted and I wouldn't have it any other way. And we could talk about that another time, but
that speaks volumes of you.
Yeah. So I've been to Haiti. I've been there four times and it is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere by far. And what is it? About a 90-minute plane ride off Miami or whatever.
Yeah.
Florida.
Another, 2 hours door to door sort of thing. 19th poorest country in the world.
Yep. And so again, man, I commend you for really stepping up and taking action in a place that really needs it. I've been there, like I said, a few times, and each time I go there, I am really blown away by just the situation there. So, what was the? And I think what you've done, I mean, in just under 3 years now, you've accomplished so much. What was the, when you decided to do this? Because like you said earlier, we entrepreneurs, we have all these ideas, no matter what they are. When you decided to do this, what were some of the very first things you did?
Freak out. stay in terror.
Curl up in the closet.
Curl up in the closet.
Yeah.
There's the stage of denial, and then until you get to acceptance, you know, there's, you know, and I laugh about that, but that is that's the truth. And it was in the realization of what I needed to become. It was, and really the first things, and I'll go through the business side of things because I think that's pretty important as well.
Absolutely.
But I think that before we get to that, the business implementation, I think it's all a psychological game. And with any entrepreneur that is listening or can benefit, it's really about, it's about the obstacle in yourself that you need to overcome. It's who you need to be to accomplish anything. Mm. You can do anything if you're the right person. And quite often, it's just the journey of becoming the right person. And there was certainly a large course of, oh, okay, if I'm going to affect the poor, okay, well, what books can I read? Where can I go? Who can I speak to? What would that be like? Who are the greatest authors? Who are the greatest contributors to poverty alleviation in the world? How do I go and meet them? How do I sound out the idea? I just began.
Yeah.
At least I put myself in a position of action.
Where do you think most entrepreneurs go when they have an idea? Like you started right there.
Home. They go home.
Okay.
Well, but they go back to bed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of, hey, listen, I don't want to be, I want to be impactful. I think a lot of people become entrepreneurs. They find something that they feel comfortable with, but that's not where their greatness lies.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was to add any influence or any effect into this podcast, it's really about the greatness that lies inside any entrepreneur, the one that can persevere, the ability to implement and move. And you are far greater than you ever think possible of yourself. And so it begins with accepting that you are amazing, accepting that you can do anything. And if someone else has done it, you can do it too. No one is smarter. No one is better. Whatever someone else has done, do it. It's the whole philosophy of R&D. And you know what R&D is, right?
Yep. Research and development.
Rip off and duplicate.
You got me. There we go.
Rip off and duplicate. Someone else has done it. Figure out how they did it.
I heard years ago, somebody said, great, good composers borrow and great ones steal. So there you go.
There we go, right? So just rip off and duplicate. You don't need to go and invent it.
Yeah.
Don't be so prideful that you think, oh, unless it was my invent. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, because the end goal is the impact you have, not who came up with it, right?
Do something.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Be great with your life. It's not an option to be. Hey, listen, this is the big thing. When I had the idea, the terror inside of me was the realization that it was not knowing that this was an opportunity, a solution. It was not an opportunity for me in my deathbed to look back and say, "Yeah, you know, I could have changed the world, but I chose the easy path."
Yeah. Well, what I love about, everything you just said, and we could rewind a minute and stop the podcast there, is you basically said you looked, the first thing you did is you looked at yourself and said, who do I need to become to pull this off?
Yes.
And I remember, I don't know who it was, but long ago, actually, no, it was Jim Rohn, the motivational speaker. I remember hearing an old speech by him years ago where he says, don't strive to become a millionaire for the $1 million, but strive to become a millionaire for who you have to become to get $1 million.
Amen.
You know, and that made me think of what you said here is, you know, in order to pull off this big, crazy, scary thing that has you balled up in the corner, you got to look inside first and go, okay, what does David need to do? Who does David need to become first and foremost? And what's been your biggest challenge? What was the hardest challenge for you in that when you were looking in the mirror and realizing who you needed to become?
Ooh. Oh man, I don't know, where would I begin with that? There was so much. There was the greatest encumbrance. So here's the thing. You're married, right, Tom?
I am.
And what's your wife's name?
Christine.
Christine. So you were at the altar with Christine at some point in front of your community, perhaps in front of your God and everyone else. And you were there and you felt that you were saying yes to Christine, right?
Yes.
That's not what you were doing. You were there in front of your community, in front of God, saying no to every other person in the world. Mm-hmm. So when I had to look in the mirror, I had to say no to everything else that I thought was coming to me. No to every other holiday or vacation or even in the challenge here, Thomas, is the time that I would have had to give up to from my children.
Yeah.
I had to say no to much more than what I said yes to.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's what is it? Addition by subtraction.
Amen.
Yeah. It's, we only have so much mental energy and passion and all those other things. We can't.
Many people, yeah, absolutely. Many people speak about the success is what you, is more about what you say no to.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did, so I'm not going to, I don't want to hijack us too much off of, the plastic bank here, but you, mm-hmm. you had a GPS technology company that you sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been an entrepreneur for, you know, 25 years, you know, prior to this and all that other stuff. What are some of the things that you took from all those experiences that have been invaluable in this endeavor?
Oh, that you can learn your way to success. And then, oh, hey, no. Oh, hold on a second. If I was to, where do I start? Listen, I've got a book coming out soon, title to be determined, that is really about understanding the actions of your life. What the actions that fulfill you. It's what you do that speaks so loudly. And when you understand what it is that you inherently love to do, who you are, or what most people call core values,
mm-hmm.
a value is an action. It's a verb. It's what you're doing. It's not what you think about. What do you do? Those are the things you value. And when you uncover those things that are important to you, those actions in your life, and you can build a business and you can manifest the destiny of a business by understanding what actions the business has to be taking on a daily basis, where every decision in the business is rooted back to the actions that will take you to success. And then from there, understanding that you should only hire people who already inherently inside of them have that action as a part of their core.
Mm-hmm.
And when you build an organization surrounding yourself with people that only think the same way you do, you as well get to become free because you can set them free to become self-actualized. And they become self-actualized in the same actions and the same thinking that you would be taking. You get out of their way. You don't make decisions for them. You free them and celebrate the decisions that they make. And that comes back to a core value. That comes back to understanding what values you need to have in your organization, what values you want in your life. And by having those 2, 3, 4 maximum, I would suggest values, you more clearly understand what to say no to.
So this is jumping. I actually had a question I was going to ask you about how you're attracting and developing talent in the plastic bank.
Yes.
Okay. And so this just, I'm just going to ask it now and bring it in there. So walk us through, pretend that everyone listening is a brand new entrepreneur and has no idea what you're talking about and they need some examples. What does it look like in the plastic bank? These values.
Absolutely. The core value of the organization is reveal value. Figure out how anything we look at any opportunity, how do we express as much value out of it as possible? That's the way we look at plastic. It's the way we look at people. It's the way we look at a collection center. It's the way we look at our brands. It's the way we look at the consumer. How do we make them even more valuable in the process? How do I make the plastic more valuable in the process? How do I make the collectors on the ground more valuable in the process? How do I celebrate them so they bring more value, are more value to their community and to the world?
I love that. I love that. That's awesome.
And that's the tenet. We don't make any decision that does not include revealing value. And, so, it's very easy there from there to find people who already think the same way. Mm-hmm. John Maxwell, a great leadership coach, great authority in leadership, really. John Maxwell, great guy, says that and should remind us all that in almost all entrepreneurial endeavors, we hire people for what they know and we fire them for who they are.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
So in that thought, what are we doing? Why do you even look at a resume? Who cares if they spent 2 weeks here? Maybe they were not aligned to work in the previous organizations, but you'll be looking for what they know. It's ridiculous. Who cares what they know if they're not the right who?
Yeah, if they're the right who, the skill can be taught.
Amen.
Right? Yeah. So you avoid so many personnel hassles when you have the right human being on your team.
The overwhelming expense and having who cares, even, you know, the whole hire, the training, everything else, but the opportunity that you lose when you hire someone wrong, especially in sales.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So make sure you hire the right who, and in that who is revealed by their actions. Tell me who your friends are. Tell me what you gravitate to. Why do you enjoy your friends? What do you do with them? What would you change about them? Where do you go to for peace? Where do you go for distraction? What kind of holidays do you like? Who else do you have in your life? Where do you go? What do you do? Show me your footsteps and I will show you you.
Right. Right. Then it's pretty simple to figure out if the person's going to be a good fit, right?
So easy. Hey, listen, here's the reveal value, love people, and continuously improve. That's the plastic bank. So when we continuously improve, this is a tenet that I've had in all of my organizations. And so when I look for people who are continuously improving, I don't even think we need to have a discussion about why it's so important to have someone that's thinking ahead, that's learning, that's growing. Because they're the ones that come to us with solutions.
Yep.
How many staff sit there and go, oh man, Tom, you suck because, you know, oh, it's always broken, it's always this way. And then they just sit there and complain and are a cancer to every other employee. Or you get someone that comes in that's a continuous improver and goes, hey, Tom, oh man, look at this. I saw this, but and I think that if we implement this, this will be amazing. Mm-hmm. Let's improve it.
Let's share the thinking.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I told somebody I work with the other day, I said, listen, this is my philosophy when it comes to paying people in my organization. The more I have to think, the less you're going to make.
Amen.
You know, I mean, totally. And the opposite is true as well. And so, and I don't want everything to run through me. You know,
you can't. No,
so,
at all. Nothing should run through you.
Yep.
You don't own a business if it runs through you. Do you want to be a high-paid employee or do you want to be an entrepreneur or a business owner?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are choices. I mean, maybe you want to be a high-paid employee and you build a team around you and you all work together and that fulfills you. That's beautiful as well. That's your option. That's your choice for sure. But many people start an entrepreneurial endeavor because they believe that they'll be free.
Yeah, and in many cases, it's the exact opposite. So
in most cases, it's the exact opposite.
That's right.
You become enslaved and you suffer in the pain and the continuous thought. Now in that train, I'll finish with in someone who's continuously improving, when I will never hire anyone ever that doesn't continuously improve. My number one question, I mean, if someone's looking for work and they go like, oh, I'm passionate, I would love to work at the plasma. Tell me about the books in your personal development library.
Mm-hmm.
Brooks, I don't have any books. Well, I'm sorry. you're probably not going to be the right fit. Now, I've learned that I can ask a few other questions around that to see they're improving in other things. You know, what courses are you taking? Where are you applying yourself? What did you learn? What are you learning right now? Mm-hmm. And if they don't have, but if they don't have any of that and they don't have a personal development, I would never hire you. You don't seek improvement. You're going to come to me and think it's my responsibility to make you improve. Screw that.
You know, it's funny. We recently, one of the companies that I'm starting, I've got somebody who's running it for me, and we were working on setting up some interviews and things like that. One of the questions that we asked them to send in with their resume, we were very specific on, gave them homework. And one of the questions was, you know, what is something that you've done in the last 3 months to improve yourself as a human being?
Awesome.
And that was on there. And what's funny is, I won't go into our whole process here. Maybe we'll do this on another podcast. I'll do it. But we set up 7 people to come in and talk to, and honest to God truth, David, I would hire every one of them.
Awesome.
Because of the process that we use, but it was all around who they were as people. Mm-hmm. And the experience and their time in the industry and all those things really didn't matter a whole lot to me. Mm-hmm. It was all about who is this type of person to be in, and this whole awesome. Continuous improvement thing was a big part of it.
Yeah.
And awesome. So I love how you've set the tone with that. And these 3 values of the plastic bank.
Reveal value,
yep.
Love people
and continuously improve. Can our listeners steal those for their own companies?
I'll give you a couple other ones that should be paramount.
All right.
And I want to finish something, because I think that I will do a disservice if people just go and ask people about books or things that they learn. What's even more important, Tom, the critical part of that question, if they say yes about this book and that book and this book and that book, the most important question you can ask is, what did you implement in your life?
Right.
How did your life change from what you learned? Mm-hmm. Because to go and learn and not apply or not do, that's treason. I can forgive you not knowing. I can forgive you not applying something that you don't know, but to know something and not make a change, treasonous.
Right.
So that's very important.
Well, and our problem isn't lack of knowledge in most cases, it's lack of implementation. You know, I mean, if I just think of my own, you know, I need to drop about 10 pounds. I know what the heck I need to do. Mm-hmm. It's not complicated. You know, that's it's will I put those things in practice? So,
yeah, well, yep. And that, I believe that comes back to a decision. Yeah. You can decide or not decide. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have wishes. Oh, I'd like to drop 10 pounds, or I'm dropping 10 pounds.
Yeah.
2 different statements.
Absolutely. So what's the biggest challenge right now with taking Plastic Bank where you want it to go?
One of the biggest is really the sales cycle for us. It's probably a 2-year sales cycle, and that's a big challenge. When we're looking at brands, we've got a bunch of brands global. We're the global 100s. Which has been very exciting, and no one has ever said no. They all love what we're doing, and they want to use the material. It just becomes a very long sales cycle, and that not only they have to test it, go through everything, and all of the quality type issues, but then when it gets implemented in a global brand, then it has to become a whole marketing strategy. They've got to, you know, it's like selling fashion. Like, I'm selling for, you know, not this next season, but the season after. Mm-hmm. So the sales cycle, that's beaten me up a little bit. You know, I've been completely self-funded, that, you know, I'm spending tens of thousands every month. That's starting to beat me up a little bit.
Yeah.
And if I was to get to really any great answer, it's really my own perseverance, my ability to continue to overcome, staying strong, not freaking out.
Tell us about a time you almost quit this thing.
So there was about an hour ago.
Isn't that how it is?
It totally.
You know, you just have those moments. What the heck am I doing?
What is going on?
You know, yeah. Time totally. To, I got. Yeah.
I've never. Hey, I made a decision.
Right.
I made a decision to get this done. I just freak out in the process going, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do yet. I don't know what to do yet. I don't. Where do I go to? What do I do? I don't even know where to go get an answer for this yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the creativity comes from that. If there's one book that I highly recommend, I go through about a book a week, and the of in my top 5 or 10, let's say top 10, is a beautiful book. Ryan Holiday's got a great book called The Obstacle is the Way.
Okay.
And if you resonate on the title, you can more fully comprehend the book, which is in the obstacle is you are the obstacle is there for you as you are. It is only an obstacle for you. It's who you need to become in the accomplishment to overcome that obstacle. The obstacle is the way. And I know in my life that anything that I didn't want to do is the very thing that I needed to do.
Yeah.
Any conversation that I needed to have with someone, I needed to do that. Anything I ever postponed, that was the one thing I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So ask yourselves, what don't you want to do right now? Go do that.
Yeah, that's a great starting point for sure. So what's as you've been taking this idea, it's obviously more than an idea at this point, but has anything surprised you along the way as you're bringing this to big companies or whatever? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the ease.
The ease?
The ease, yeah. It's an incredibly non-competitive serving the world. It's funny, but it's so true.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at it, but it just kind of made me chuckle. I was like, yeah, that's kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, date myself, phone book. I mean, how many plumbers are there in your community?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100? More? I don't know, you know, how big your community is, but I mean, how many bakers, how many restaurants? Like, what? Are you kidding me? How many people are trying to serve the world? Like, what, none?
Right.
You know, a few, a handful, nice ones. There's nice stories all over. But to serve the 7.2 billion people on the planet, it's surprisingly non-competitive. And if you want to make $1 billion, make $1 from a billion people.
Yeah, by serving them.
Just $1.
Yeah.
That's not hard.
No, not at all.
And it's not that people make $2 a day or less. It's just that nobody's run to offer a product that is profitable to sell to someone that makes $2 a day or less. They want, they're consumers as well. They want to buy stuff.
Yeah.
So go figure out something of need that's important for them that they can afford that's under $2 a day. I mean, it's still $60 a month. There's something in there that you could sell for $3 that they would be gladly buy.
So let's get down to that. Let's get down to that person, that person in those communities that are really benefiting from this.
Yes.
They're able to, you know, bring plastic in and things like that. What has been what's your take on them and their attitude towards this and their mindset? And just, I'd love to hear that.
Oh, the people that we're trying to affect?
Yeah.
The ones that we love the most?
Yep.
That's a touching question for me as well. You've been a Port-au-Prince and yeah. One of the stories I love to share with everyone that's never been, noting that most of the business is done on the sidewalk, on the side of the street, mm-hmm. The very few stores really. And the ones that are busiest in the morning are the shoe shine. And to have dirty shoes, even in all of the dirt and all of the squalor, it's unacceptable.
Yeah.
A lineup for the shoe shine in the morning, to be clean, to be dignified, to hold their head up high. And the women are coiffed and the hair is done beautifully and everyone is clean. And I go through all of the video that I ever take and it's such a squalor. And every person is clean and dignified and holds their head high.
Yeah.
I don't think the conversation is about the people themselves, but more about the conditions that are imposed on the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you brought that up, it reminded me of the first time I went to Haiti to meet my son. And we were driving down one of those roads in the vehicle we were in with the group we were with. And I remember noticing several little shopkeepers with dirt floors, like dirt, and they were sweeping them.
Yes.
You know,
and sweeping the dirt floor. Right.
Yeah.
It's not okay. Listen, there's dirt, but there's dirt.
Right. And just like you said, that it's having that dignity.
Right.
Everyone
wants to feel respected.
Yeah. Bringing back a lot of memories here.
Of value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to love someone. That's to do for them. Remember, it's an action. To love someone is to do for them. It's not, when you say you love someone, you can't sit back and say, oh, I take this warm feeling when I'm with you. That's not loving someone. That's selfish. To love someone is to go and do for them, to give to them, to serve them. That's to love someone.
So I'm going to make a proclamation to Strongpreneur Nation right now, that you could just play this podcast every Sunday and count it as church. And I don't care what your faith is.
That's beautiful.
You know, yeah.
That's nice. That's
so,
nice. But it is though. But that's love. I mean, that transcends all philosophies.
Yeah.
Do for people.
So compare David 20 years ago to the guy on here now.
Oh, I know. I feel like I did a hard prison sentence. You know, you come out the other end a little hardened. I have trouble. I have less and less in common now with small-minded conversations. Mm-hmm. I struggle if people want to talk about sports or things that they can't control. Oh, you okay?
Excuse me. Okay. Sorry, I ran out of water.
That adds to the podcast. Listeners love that.
Yeah, you got me all choked up, man. I totally wrecked the moment. I'm sorry, everybody. You were talking about not being small-minded, and here I am. So,
it's awesome. That's being real. I love real people. That's the thing, right? And a lot of people have struggled to living an authentic life, right? So, back to core values. When you understand what it is that fulfills you in your life, and you want more of in your life, or less of in your life, and you live that all the time, you become an authentic leader because you're authentic. The authenticity itself is leadership.
Yeah.
I mean, we can look at Steve Jobs. He was an ass, mm-hmm. but people followed him because he was authentic. Just being authentic, be authentic, find who you are and be that. And that can be a lot of questions. You know, that's a lot. It's a lot. It's introspection in the end. What is it that I want in my life? What do I want to be doing in my life?
How did you answer that question?
I had an amazing experience through serendipity, just like us meeting, mm-hmm. that pointed me to an exercise that I facilitate called a values auction, where I put people in a scenario where they have to fight for things, where they have an internal conflict, where they can pay attention to the things that they would fight for. Mm. Like for me, my core value is living freely.
Yeah.
Live free. Right. And in that, I want to be able to make my decisions when I want to make them, how I want to make them. I want to live freely. And when I began living that in my previous business, when I began to be authentic in who I was, it became very, very evident in what I needed to implement in the business to perpetuate that. Mm-hmm. Including staff colluding to try to take me out of business and all kinds of things. But when I lived authentically, the answers that would perpetuate me living authentically appeared. I can prove that what you think about is what you see. Prove it. And I'll ask you, Tom, where are you right now? You're in your office, right?
Yeah, I'm in my office in Manitou Springs, Colorado, at my house.
Okay. Yep. And so, you got a desk in front of you, there's stuff around you, there's stuff on the walls.
Yep.
So look for everything in your room. This is a good experience for everybody. And maybe wherever you are right now, you could probably be a part of this. And if you just look around the room for everything that's white, because in a moment you're going to need to point to everything that's white. It's critically important. Mm-hmm. You being able to recognize all the white in the room is so important. If you look around, give you another 5 seconds or so, look for everything white. You think you got it all? You think you got all the white before you close your eyes?
Yeah, I'm pretty close.
Yep. Pretty close? Okay. Okay, now close your eyes, Tom.
Okay.
And now point to everything that It's brown. Right? So you can open your eyes, you see, but it's probably brown all over as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't see it because you were focused. You were thinking, you see what you think about.
There's actually a lot more brown in here than white.
There you go.
Yeah.
But you couldn't see it because you were thinking about white. It's the same in your life. It's the values that you have. When you reveal what it is that's important to you, it's all around you. The world is abundant. When you know what it is that fulfills you, what you want in your life, you end up seeing more of it, which perpetuates your authentic journey.
I love it. And you call this the values auction?
Well, that's just a beautiful exemplification of the power of thought.
Okay.
And that what you think about is what you see. A values auction is an opportunity that I'd like to conduct with executive teams where there's a great list, about 400 of the most common actions in life or values. And we get them to pare that down. We get to a point where they have to, where we auction values. Like let's just say that one of them is love people. And there could be a bunch of people that love that feel that that's important for them. But they have a limited amount of resources to bid on the values. And the process is to uncover at what point you'd be willing to not to, if you go all in on that value, that is something that you're going to fight for. That helps you understand, why did you want that? Why would you fight for it? But let's say you had 10,000 imaginary dollars and you gave up after 2,000, well, okay, then other values are more important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It provides a scarcity so that you can be self-reflective on why you want something or not.
Mm. And you know, sadly, most people don't take the time to look inward like this, right?
They don't.
So,
I think the biggest challenge is that they believe that their values should be what society thinks that they should be.
Yeah.
What societal values are, fashionable values. Oh, it should be, you know, giving back to the community. It should be this, should be that. And then they live an inauthentic life. And they never receive the success that was there for them.
So what do you tell the person, what do you tell the person who's just waking up to the fact that they've not been living an authentic life?
Congratulations. Congratulations.
And then
rest of your life.
But on the other side, they know that they need to make these changes, and it might mean selling a house and moving it, or quitting a job or a career or a business, or all these things that are scary.
Yeah.
What do you tell that person now?
Congratulations.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. There's a lot of turmoil. There's lots of change. When I revealed my values and then the values in my organization, I had a 100% turnover. I was easily able to look inside the organization and understand that nobody fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it allowed me to start to hire the right people slowly, slowly. I would replace them all. And I became even more powerful. I got to live even more freely. And the company grew because I had the right people there that I could set free, that wanted me to set them free so that I could live freely. Yeah, there's turmoil. There's change. There is absolute change. And we all know that when the snake loses its skin or the lobster loses its shell, there's pressure that forces it. And greatness lies on the other side of that. The obstacle is the way. Yeah, that's an obstacle. When you realize that and you can see those as obstacles, that's what you need to do. That's when you overcome it. That's when you become the person.
Right.
You see?
So something I hear, I've heard from a few people through the years is they want to do good. They want to help. There's some sort of charitable cause or value that's driving them, right?
Yeah.
And they don't know how to marry that with the fact that they have to make money. They have to make a living. They have to... you know, one of the things I've heard from people is, you know, everything I want to do doesn't make any money and we need to make money. Like, how do you work with those two?
Come on. The plastic bank is a for-profit business.
Okay.
I just think that you haven't seen how to monetize what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And people, the last thing you should be doing is giving anyone a handout.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't reveal the value in them.
Right.
That diminishes their value. Enliven someone. bring them community, give them the support behind them, below them, so they feel stronger to go and do on their own. That's different.
Yeah, it's absolutely empowering. You're right.
Empower people. Yep. Love people. Yep. You see, do for people. Love them. Reveal their value and continuously improve. You see how it all works together? See, we continuously improve on how we can reveal more value in someone. We love them into the action of revealing their value. We figure out how to do that better in different ways that affect different people. We make them become more powerful so that they can collect more. They're more connected to their community. The children look at them differently. They see them as contributors to society. It gives the children hope and direction.
Yeah.
They become stronger entrepreneurs. That's not hard.
Yeah. And I guess I'm glad we talked about this one little part here, because I want people to see that it is possible for you to make money and still do good in the world.
Oh, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Tom, this is very important.
Yeah.
You got to make money.
You have to.
You got to.
Yep.
That's where you reveal the value. You have to perpetuate it. Mm-hmm. If it's a nonprofit, in it itself is a depletion. It's a scarcity focus. And you have to have an abundant focus.
Well, even in the exercise that you took me through about looking for the white, if I'm sitting here calling myself a nonprofit all the time.
Yes, well, exactly.
You know, it.
Exactly.
All I see is no profit.
Exactly. All you see is depletion.
Right. That was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yes.
Like how I put that together. All right. Hey, I'm like a lap behind, but I'll be here. All right. So you just take a water break. I'll catch up, man. You take a smoke break up ahead and I'll catch up. So so check it out. As I got two more questions for you that I want to start closing down here. And I've had a blast talking to you and it's funny because you're talking about something. My mind is still on the thing from a minute or two ago, trying to go, how does this apply? And this is awesome. And I love it. And
there's lots of information.
Yeah.
There was lots. There's a lot of depth in what I was in my answers. Yeah.
So one of the things I ask all my guests is about our Strongpreneur Nation pledge. And yes. And it's on strongpreneurnation.com. It's on the bottom of our about page. And I would just like, you know, just your take on which of these resonates with you the most and why.
They're all beautiful and I enjoy them all. And I, you know, I have to resonate on, you know, I will have fun. In the essence of it, in that it is a being a part of the journey. See, the journey is the destination.
Right.
That is the destination. There's no, you can't be, you say, I'll be happy when. That's ridiculous. And because it's what you think about is what you see. And so when you enjoy the journey now, and you say, oh, things are amazing now, I'm not waiting for something else, you get more amazing. You become more successful faster when you enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm. And let me say, it doesn't surprise me that you say that. But here's what's funny, and this is just me being me here, being real. Yeah. I tend to lean toward being a hard ass.
Yeah.
And you know, Marine Corps mindset, you know, what we call the hard charger, which is all good. It's needed at times. But when I look back, the number one thing that I've struggled with in my entrepreneurial journey has always been lightening up and having fun, because I'm so focused on where I have to get to. And I recall a time, and I've told this story before on here, but I recall a time with one of my with my business partner in one of my businesses years ago. In the early days, every time we had a sale, we'd call or text the other guy and go, hey, I just sold this. And he'd be like, cool. And like, we celebrated every day. Right. And the bigger the company got and the busier we got and all this, we stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. And it became not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate you bringing that up, because you're like, you know, one of many guests that have been on here that have pointed to that one thing. And I think if nothing else, it's just for me to keep reminding me that, dude, you got to have a good time, man. You got to lighten up, have fun. You can't be on all the time.
Yeah, you got to enjoy life.
Like, enjoy your life.
Still be on all the time, but then be present in it.
Right.
And enjoy it as it is.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
So last thing here before before we get going here, you've got 5 minutes on stage in front of 1,000 entrepreneurs. What do they need to walk away with after they hear David Katz?
You know, that life's an action. It is really a verb. It's to live, right? And it really is that. Everything comes from an action. You can talk about it all day long. You can hope for it all day long. Dream about it. Aspire for it. Have amazing ideas. But if you don't have action, you'll not have anything in life.
Love it. So as I wrap this up, first of all, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This is awesome, and I can't wait to hang out with you again sometime in the near future. Seriously, like I want to make it happen.
Right. Thank you, Tom.
And if somebody's listening to this and they want to help, what do they do? How do they find you? What action can they take to help push this thing forward?
Thank you. There's a variety of actions you can take. And if I could remind the entire audience that really it's their actions in a daily life. So the material that you purchase, the companies you do business with, that's an action. You can make great change just by being a consumer. You can make great change just by demanding that corporations change the way they manufacture, the materials they manufacture, the way they dispose of the products that they sell. Mm-hmm. You have a tremendous amount of power as a consumer, tremendous amount of power. So that should always be number one. Make decisions daily on how you affect other people in the world.
Okay.
That's important. Now, plasticbank.org, we had a great petition. Love you to be there. And there's a variety of ways at plasticbank.org that you can be involved, which could be as little as, just being a part of the movement and sharing it. Mm-hmm. And it could be as great as building a collection center and creating an entrepreneurial experience. In Haiti, if you want to get together with your company and come to Haiti, you can build a collection center and you can dedicate it. And then you can, you can work with the entrepreneur there and guide them and support them. There's a lot of ways to be involved in global change.
Good stuff. You know, as I've looked on your website, even, this is a challenge for everybody that's listening. Pick a brand. You know, I'm looking at, on your website right now, and we've got people tweeting to at Pepsi Cola.
Yeah.
You know, please start using social plastic at Plastic Bank and things like that. So if you're listening to this, hop on Facebook, hop on Twitter and Instagram and all these other things.
That's right.
And take one action. If you don't do anything else, if everyone listening to this just took one action today, there'd be at least four people who would do something. So,
if four people do something, that's change.
Right. It's still change. So, yeah, take action. Go to plasticbank.org. Make sure you look up David, follow him on Twitter, Instagram, all the good stuff that he's on. And I really, really appreciate you being here today. It's been my honor to have this time to talk with you. And I definitely am grateful for Marcel of hooking us up a month ago.
Thank you, Tom. It was a real pleasure.
Sounds good. Have a good one, David. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Chat again, Tom. Bye.
All right, Strongpreneur Nation. What's up with that? That was such an awesome interview with David Katz. He brought it. There were so many amazing nuggets in there to help you build a stronger life, build a stronger business personally, professionally, all the things I'm trying to say here because I'm jazzed up by this interview that we just had. So remember, go on social and reach out to the world's biggest brands and tell them to get off their butts and get with David. If you know somebody that works at one of these brands, make it happen. As you heard in the interview, the biggest thing that surprised him was how easy it was and how great of a reception it has been from these big brands. So let's help him connect with more people to have a bigger impact in the world. Just by the little bit of work that we can do here in the Strongpreneur Nation to help him out. All right. And then finally, don't forget, if you're listening to this, go to the Strongpreneur Nation Mastermind group on Facebook, request access, come on into the group and get the resources that you need to grow personally and professionally. And with that, I'm going to ask my man Travis to bring in the big guitars really loud and crazy. Put some cool effects on them and make it sound all funky or something this time. Here we go. We'll see you next time.